What we do in life echoes in eternity.
You will once again be fighting for our freedom. Not from tyranny, oppression, or persecution, but from annihilation. We're fighting for our right to live.
From the WSFI studio in Libertyville, Illinois, this is Pro-Life Today with your host, Joe Scheidler.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Pro-Life Today on WSFI. That's 88.5 FM Catholic Radio. I'm your host, Joe Scheidler. But today I'm going to turn the program over to a guest host, my wife, Ann Scheidler, because we're going to be discussing an issue that's before the public right now, the Little Sisters of the Poor, who are before the Supreme Court. And Ann is very knowledgeable on this subject. So here is my guest host today, Ann Scheidler.
Thank you, Joe. Yes, well, the Little Sisters of the Poor have been battling the Department of Health and Human Services over the demand that they provide in their insurance coverage, contraception and sterilization for employees. And they have battled this all the way up to the Supreme Court. So we've asked Mary Fiorito to join us to discuss this Little Sisters case. Mary is an attorney. She's the former Respect Life coordinator of the Archdiocese of Chicago and then served as vice chancellor and as a special assistant to Cardinal Francis George. Thanks for joining us, Mary.
Oh, Ann, thank you for asking me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thanks. Can you tell us, first of all, just who are the Little Sisters of the Poor?
Well, the Little Sisters of the Poor are a Catholic religious order of women founded by Jeanne Jougan, a French woman, in France many years ago, and she began her order by simply taking care of an elderly poor neighbor who had no one to care for her in her old age, and then invited other women to help her in her ministry to the elderly poor, whom she sadly found everywhere in the part of France where she lived, and simply people didn't either have the time or the inclination to take care of the elderly. So the entire order sprung out of a desire to serve, but the sisters have now spread from France into hundreds of different countries around the world. They're present here in the United States in almost every major city in the Chicago area. They have two homes, one in Lincoln Park within the city of Chicago limits, and the other in Palatine in Illinois, which is a suburb up in the northwest suburbs. So they're very much a presence here. The sisters care exclusively for the indigent poor. So in order for one to be cared for in the Little Sisters of the Poor home, you either have to be a elderly religious man or woman, so a priest or a sister, or someone who does not have any financial means to go into an assisted living facility or into some kind of home care. So you have to be literally without any money before the sisters will take you. So that has really been their mission, to care for those who have no financial means to care for themselves in their old age.
And it's just a beautiful ministry, certainly a great example of the corporal works of mercy. And
They are such exemplary sisters. If anyone's from the Chicago area who's listening to this, you often, they're a mendicant order, which means that they beg. So the sisters ask for all that they need to run the home and to care for the residents. So they used to be quite a regular presence outside the Board of Trade in downtown Chicago. And so to beg, they would stand there too. They call them the begging sisters. And they would stand and they would ask people for money as they went by to help care for the elderly poor at their home. And the New York Times actually had a wonderful story, a feature story, on the sister in, I think it is in the Bronx, who is the sister who would be called the begging sister for the community, who goes from grocery store to grocery store once a week to get food to feed the residents that they have in their care. So you don't find many religious orders these days that are truly mendicants, but sisters are, and they rely totally on God's providence, and he takes care of them so that they can take care of his poor.
Well, it's hard to believe that the government would be pursuing a lawsuit against these sisters who do such wonderful work. I mean, this is work that could very likely fall on the shoulders of the government if you didn't have the sisters willing to do it. And, of course, the sisters will do it so much better than any government agency can do it.
The government would have done it. But exactly, this is the kind of service and work that the sisters do is something that the government should be doing everything in its power to support and to encourage rather than to discourage and punish. And that's what is happening to the sisters now. They are being punished for practicing their religious beliefs as they see them. And the judiciary simply has no right, the government has no right to tell someone what their religious beliefs are and what they are not. We learned that in the Hobby Lobby decision, which, of course, was a great victory for the First Amendment and religious liberty. And we're praying 8 remaining justices, now that the untimely death of Justice Scalia has occurred last month, that the justices will see that this is simply just a raw violation of the First Amendment.
And that's the whole issue, really, that we're facing here, is the First Amendment and our freedom to practice religion as we see fit to practice it. And for the government to tell a religious order or a church or religious people what constitutes their religion, what is religious enough to be allowed to be free, is just ridiculous. So what exactly...
Interesting opinion that the judge in the 10th Circuit who had ruled against the Little Sisters of the Poor, and the judges there wanted to have an en banc rehearing. So that means all of the judges in that particular district together would hear the case again, and that petition for en banc was denied. And it's interesting because the 5 of the justices took a very unusual step of publishing an opinion about why it was so wrong to deny the sisters that re-en banc hearing. And the justice who wrote one of the opinions said, "The opinion of the panel majority is clearly and gravely wrong on an issue that has little to do with contraception, but a great deal to do with religious liberty. When a law demands that a person do something that the person considers sinful, and the penalty for refusal is a large financial penalty, then the law imposes a substantial burden on that person's free exercise of religion." And then he went on to say, "It is not the job of the judiciary to tell people what their religious beliefs are." And so, unfortunately, I think by the government, by the Obama administration, this case has been framed as about contraception, being about contraception. But our objection, as you know, Anne, to this case is not about making contraception illegal. Contraception is legal in the United States and will likely remain so for the foreseeable future. And it's not about whether the government's going to continue to fund it. The government, both federal and state, funds contraceptive programs at free or no cost to American women. They spend billions of dollars a year doing this. So it's not about free contraception. It's only about whether or not the government can force religious institutions like the Little Sisters of the Poor to provide not only contraceptives, but also sterilizations and abortifacient drugs like Ella, what they call the week after pill. So whether or not the government can force the Little Sisters of the Poor to provide those services, that's what this case is about.
And the fines, if the sisters and any other organization that falls in that same category, if they refuse to comply with the government, the fines are absolutely outrageous.
They're astronomical. One figure I saw estimates what the fines the sisters would have to pay at close to $70 million.
Exactly.
So essentially what would happen is the sisters would shut their homes down.
Yeah, they could no longer take care of the poor. It would be
right.
They would be
right.
Charged $100 per employee per day.
Correct.
For
right.
Not
and
complying
so, yeah, so
with
$70 million, I think, is the conservative estimate that I read.
Yeah.
And it would simply make it absolutely possible for the sisters to care for the poor that they are caring for, which means that we have to turn them probably back to the government because, again, as I mentioned at the beginning of our conversation, the Little Sisters only care for the poor who are indigent. So they have nowhere else to go, and
so
the government would have to step in and care for them.
And the government would not do it well.
You're talking about working against your own interests. I don't understand what the Obama administration seeks to gain here.
It makes no sense at all. And we know that if the government did take it over, it would cost them probably astronomically more to provide way less care. And without that loving aspect of it that the sisters bring, because they truly love the people that they care for.
Right, and what the sisters are doing are treating each of their residents as if they were caring for Christ himself. That is really so evident. If you've ever been to one of the
homes, yes.
When I was in college, I volunteered on Thursday nights at the Little Sisters of the Poor home in Lincoln Park. There was a Jesuit priest who rounded up a group of us and would take us every Thursday night to help serve meals to the residents. And I tell you, I remember it. That was 20 years ago. I remember it to this day. This home was spotless. It was joyful. And the care and respect that the sisters treated their elderly residents with was just so evident, greeting everyone by name, and you could tell that the residents themselves were just so happy to be there. Often I think people, when they get to a certain age, do kind of feel like they've been shunted off, but they were treated as if they were the most important person in the world. And I have a friend who had a family member who died in one of the Little Sisters' homes, the one up in Palatine, and when they know a person is dying, all the sisters come to the room to be with that resident at the moment of death, and they pray and sing with the person until the person passes away. So they're literally surrounded not only with loving faces as they go to meet the Lord, but with prayers. They're accompanied into heaven with prayers and with joy and with concern and love. And I don't think any government home would be summoning people into a room to pray as they pass away. So this is the kind of extraordinary gift that the Little Sisters are to the United States and to the elderly poor who live here, and that anyone would have the gall to interfere with the sisters' ministry. I mean, it strikes you on your face. It's just incredibly inappropriate. However, it's just not the place of the United States government to do this. I would think that they would have better things to do.
You would think they would have better things to do. You're right. A friend of mine, her mother ended up staying at the Little Sisters facility in Lincoln Park for the last year of her life. And my friend was so impressed with the loving care that both her mother and the other residents were receiving that she's been a volunteer there a couple of days a week ever since.
Yeah, you often hear that. People, it just takes one visit and meeting those sisters. And if someone said to me, who used to give the money up for the Board of Trade, they just suck you in, and then you're you're gone, and then like you can't get away from them. But it really is I think what a beautiful example of God never being outdone in generosity. Cardinal George always used to say this: God is never outdone in generosity, and when we give Him the first place and we care not just in terms of our money, but also our time and our talent and our treasure, He really does give us back gifts in abundance.
Well, Mary, we need to take a short break here, and we'll be back in a couple minutes.
Have to take a short break here on Pro-Life Today. I'm Joe Scheidler. We'll be right back to continue our conversation with our guest host, my wife, Ann Scheidler, who is talking with Mary Fiorito, and they're discussing the Little Sisters of the Poor and the Health and Human Services mandate. So we'll be back in just a moment.
Hi, this is Wes Riccio from the Holy Family Catholic Bookstore. If you have a child, grandchild, or godchild being baptized, receiving their first Holy Communion, or being confirmed, remember that Holy Family has the area's largest selection of gifts, accessories, and supplies to make their special day more memorable. For baptism, we have cradle medals, baby Bibles, wall crosses, and nightlights. We have beautiful baptismal gowns and accessories, as well as invitations and cards. If you have a First Holy Communion in your family, we have a wide variety of mass books and gift sets, rosaries and medals. We have exquisite veils for the girls and ties for the boys, along with all of the necessary party supplies. Our suggestions for new confirmants include personal-sized Bibles, prayer books, and other spiritual readings that can follow them through their lifetime. And don't forget the godparents and sponsors. We have gifts and cards for them as well. The Holy Family Catholic Bookstore is at 9249 Old Green Bay Road, Pleasant Prairie, Wisconsin. More information is available on Facebook.
Are you retired or near retirement? Do you want to keep a larger amount of your assets in a safe place with guaranteed interest rates to protect yourself from a huge market swing? Are you amazed at how low the interest rates are at your bank? If you said yes to any or all of those questions, you may want to call me, Matt Tomlinson, at Catholic Financial Life to discuss our guaranteed fixed rate annuities. Call 847-548-MATT, 847-548-6288. Products not available in all states.
Hello, I'm Scott Hahn from Franciscan University of Steubenville in Ohio. Catholic radio is essential for the new evangelization. It reaches people who are not necessarily going to darken the doorways of a local parish, but they'll be driving by, and you can recommend it. You can even turn it on when you got a passenger in the car. Catholic radio deserves your support as well, not only your prayer support, but also your financial aid. So I encourage y'all, get involved and spread the word. God bless you.
WSFI 88.5 FM Catholic Radio is committed to bringing quality Catholic programs to our local community. We only can do that with your financial support. Take a moment now to donate online at wsfiradio.org or mail your tax-deductible donation to WSFI 88.5 FM Catholic Radio, P.O. Box 885, Libertyville, Illinois 60048. That's WSFI 88.5 FM Catholic Radio, P.O. Box 885, Libertyville, Illinois 60048. Donations of any amount are greatly appreciated.
I'm Joe Scheidler. We're back on WSFI 88.5 FM Catholic Radio. We're discussing the Little Sisters of the Poor and the HHS mandate, and they're going before the Supreme Court. And our assistant host today, my wife, Ann Scheidler. We'll take it away, Ann.
Thank you, Joe. We're talking with Mary Fiorito, a Chicago area attorney and mom and former assistant to Cardinal Francis George, and Mary is very knowledgeable on the issues surrounding this HHS mandate, the Little Sisters of the Poor case, and the Little Sisters have gained quite a lot of sympathy around the country from people who can't understand what the government is thinking interfering with their mission and their outreach to the indigent elderly. An organization started by Helen Alvarez, who's a law professor at George Mason University, Women Speak for Themselves. She launched this back when the HHS mandate was first pronounced as a way to bring women into the forefront to talk about what concerns women really do have and how just throwing contraception at them is not what women want. What is the Women Speak for Themselves doing in specific, in particular, in relation to the Little Sisters case, Mary?
As you know, Ann, Women Speak for Themselves is a grassroots organization, so across the country, and I believe you and I are both one of these grassroots women. There's more than 41,000 women from all 50 states, and they come from all different walks of life, a lot of stay-at-home moms, but a lot of doctors and lawyers, medical professionals, university professors, who all believe that our country's guarantee of religious liberty is one of our most crucial freedoms. And, of course, knowing that the countries that respect religious freedom are more likely to respect the rights of women worldwide, that's universal. If you look at individual countries' particular religious liberty laws, Women Speak for Themselves really wants to be a presence of help to the Little Sisters of the Poor on the day the Supreme Court is going to hear the case. And any of your listeners who would be interested in joining the efforts in the Chicago area can go to the Women Speak for Themselves website. There's going to be events at both of the Little Sisters' homes in Palatine and in Lincoln Park. And it's not only going to be a day where we, just as local women, try to make people more aware of what the sisters are doing in our community, but also to be a day of service and to help the sisters with some of their day-to-day tasks in caring for the elderly. So some of us are going to be playing bingo. Some of us are going to be serving meals and cleaning up. Some of us are going to be playing card games. Some of us are going to be giving manicures to some of the female residents. So there's a wide variety of ways we're going to be engaged in direct service to the Little Sisters, and then we'll have a prayer service. Some communities are doing it before the day of service. Some are doing it following the day of service. We'll have a public prayer service outside of the Little Sisters facilities where we hope to draw the attention of media and others to what went on during the day, what's going on during the day, and also what the sisters are doing in their particular communities.
And I think the prayer is going to be such an important element of that day, and of course the days leading up to it as well. I personally thought that it was probably pretty likely that the sisters would emerge victorious from the Supreme Court. But in the intervening time now, Justice Antonin Scalia has died, and that shakes up the balance of the court. So now we can't be quite sure just exactly what may happen. So we need to pray for the attorney that will be arguing this case and for the justices to be open to the truth and to a sense of compassion about what it is that the sisters bring to our whole nation and really to the world, since they do operate their homes all around the world. We need to be sure those justices are listening carefully and are open to an understanding just what's at stake if they deny the sisters and would rule against them.
Right. I have to say I'm hopeful when I think about it in some ways, because the Supreme Court in its makeup as it is now ruled 9-0 in a very important religious liberty case called Hosanna Tabor, where the court very firmly held that the government had no place telling, in this case it was particularly Lutheran religious community, where the lower court had said, no, the government is allowed to tell a religious organization who its ministers are and who they aren't. And the Supreme Court said, no, 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 no. The government has no business saying to the Lutheran Church, employee X is a minister, employee Y is not. That is not our business. It is absolutely not our place to be involved in who religious organizations consider their ministers and who they do not. And so the court ruled on that particular decision 9-0. There were no dissents. And so I think if the court will see this as a case about religious liberty, which is what it is, and not a case about either denying or promoting contraceptives and abortifacient drugs, then I'm actually quite hopeful. And as you say, everyone's quite concerned about the passing of Justice Scalia because he was such a stalwart defender of religious liberty in the First Amendment. However, you know, I remain hopeful that because of that Hosanna Tabor decision and some of the legal reasoning that went into it, that the sisters stand a pretty good chance of winning that case. But boy, we really need to be praying because the abortion rights advocacy groups and the feminist groups that support abortion and contraception has been key to women's freedom. They have really been working the lobbies on this as well. So there is a lot to be praying for that day. And if the court splits 4-4, I've had some people ask me what happens if it's a tie, as they would say in baseball. If the court splits 4-4, then that 10th Circuit ruling against the Little Sisters will stand. We really have to pray that at least perhaps Justice Kennedy will come over to our side and that we get a 5-3 ruling.
Well, that's what we'll be praying for, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's an unusual situation in terms of the court's makeup. No one could have predicted this.
No, that's for sure. Pro-Life Action League has been very involved in this whole religious liberty battle, which might seem a little bit off mission because we are a pro-life organization, but when the HHS mandate initially came down, we felt like somebody needs to take leadership in protesting this, and we are well situated with activists all over the country to go ahead and take that on. So we organized a series of protests and rallies all across the United States, and we got tremendous support from people who were previously active in the pro-life movement and who saw that connection between our religious liberty, our right to free speech, and the right to life. And so it's been something that we have really paid close attention to, and in fact, one of the other pro-life organizations that had been involved in those protests was Priests for Life, and they brought a case also, and it is before the Supreme Court on that same day, the several cases that were wrapped into the one argument. So,
right, that's a good point, Anna, so this is not simply a case being brought by the Little Sisters of the Poor. There's a number of different nonprofit and religious organizations that have now been all grouped together for this particular hearing on the 23rd. So there's a couple of different Baptist universities, for example, and Priests for Life, as you've mentioned, and EWTN, as many of your listeners would be familiar with that particular Catholic television station. So there's a number of different Catholic organizations because it's all really dealing with the same issue, which is whether or not nonprofit organizations are entitled to an exemption from the HHS Obamacare mandate. So it's very interesting to know, this is points been made by a number of different people who have analyzed it, that the government did provide exemptions to big companies like Exxon, for example, and to the city of New York, another example. So all sorts of secular organizations were given an exemption to the Obamacare mandate, but not the Little Sisters of the Poor. So the sisters are simply asking to be treated in the same way the government's treating Exxon and the city of New York.
And you can't help asking yourself, what is motivating this? Why are they so determined to force religious organizations to comply with a mandate that should never have been made in the first place?
Well,
the demand is out of line to start with.
What they want to show is that this issue is no longer up for conversation. Abortifacient drugs, abortifacient contraceptives, sterilizations are simply part of what the government wants to call now normal health care. And if you attempt to stand in the way of what they want to do to promote complete and total access with unfettered and paid for by the government to drugs like Ella and to sterilization procedures, then you are simply a backwards person and we're going to put you in your place. I mean, essentially, that's what the government is saying. You can simply not exempt yourself from these services because they are just a normal, average part of healthcare. And if you talk to any OBGYN, they will tell you that quite the opposite is true. It's infertility that means there's something wrong and needs to be treated
exactly.
with healthcare. Not fertility. Fertility isn't an illness.
And that,
fertility is a normal state of being for most people,
yes,
right?
Yes, you would be a healthy woman.
Fertility is the illness. And infertility, as if it's not, it's just crazy. But this is sort of where we are right now.
Yeah, we're in a topsy-turvy world.
This isn't about contraception. It's about our liberties that are guaranteed under the First Amendment. However, this is the issue that the government simply will not back off on.
I think it also brings into focus for us the importance of the upcoming election and who gets to appoint the next justices to the Supreme Court, because these kinds
right.
of cases that involve our liberties will continue to come before the Supreme Court. And it's of utmost importance that people are on that court who do respect the Constitution, the foundations of this country, and who will not allow those liberties to be trampled or taken from us or whittled away so that we no longer right. recognize what America should be, what America was founded to be.
You know, I believe there's a new poll out that shows that among younger people, so the generation 30 and under, more than half of them would try to eliminate the religious freedoms that are protected by the First Amendment, which is absolutely terrifying for me. I think we saw some of this kind of attitude during the whole Kim Davis situation, simply didn't want her name and asked for a reasonable accommodation. The outcry and the way she was humiliated publicly and excoriated. And I think for a lot of people, they didn't realize that the First Amendment allows her to ask for an exemption. She wasn't denying the licenses to anyone. She simply asked that her name not be put on it and another person's name be put there instead.
It's perfectly reasonable. Yeah.
And so it really was very much, to me, very disturbing that you had a conversation about the First Amendment that many people were saying, we need to overturn this. When these bedrock principles, and they really are bedrock principles, it was what our country was founded on. Our country was founded by people who came here because they wanted to practice their faith. That's why the United States was founded. And to throw all of that away because of whatever the cultural issue of the day demands that some people might not follow along with it is really terrifying to me, because it may be Kim Davis one day, but it's going to be Catholics doing something the next day, or
of
Protestants,
course.
You know. Some, so the,
it
the
may even be atheists one day.
It's interesting, right after the Kim Davis decision, and she was eventually granted the accommodation, which got virtually no media publicity whatsoever, there was a case that went up to the Supreme Court, I believe, it might have been one of the appellate courts, where two Muslim truck drivers who had as part of their regular schedule a stop at a liquor store, asked their company that they be given an exemption from making the deliveries at the liquor store, and their company told them no. And they brought a lawsuit, and they won.
And they won.
And have, because they asked for a reasonable accommodation. There were other drivers who were more than willing to take their route and to trade with them on the day the liquor store deliveries had to cease, and the company simply wanted to force them and to show them, no, you will do what we tell you to do. And because they did not offer the reasonable accommodation, the two Muslim truck drivers won, as they should have, because this is America.
That's all the time we have for today. Thanks again to our guest, Mary Fiorito. I want to thank you so much discussing the Little Sisters of the Poor and the Health and Human Services mandate. So join, and I want to thank my wife, Ann Scheidler, for being our guest host today. Join us next week on Pro-Life Today. Until then, from all of us at WSFI 88.5 FM Catholic Radio, I'm Joe Scheidler. Thanks for listening.
Hello, I am Bishop Don Hying from the Diocese of Gary, Indiana. Catholic Radio has a remarkable reach into the minds and hearts of all sorts of people who may not be going to church, who may not have any other connection to learning about the faith. I know so many people have grown in the Catholic faith because they listen to Catholic Radio.
WSFI 88.5 FM Catholic Radio is committed to bringing quality Catholic programs to our local community. We only can do that with your financial support. Take a moment now to donate online at wsfiradio.org or mail your tax-deductible donation to WSFI 88.5 FM Catholic Radio, P.O. Box 885, Libertyville, Illinois 60048. That's WSFI 88.5 FM Catholic Radio, P.O. Box 885, Libertyville, Illinois 60048. Donations of any amount are greatly appreciated.
Looking at term life insurance? Consider life insurance from Catholic Financial Life and see how we put Catholic values in action. To learn more, call Matt Tomlinson at 847-548-MATT. 847-548-6288.
Listen at 7 o'clock p.m. every Tuesday to WSFI Spotlight, a half-hour conversation with outstanding Catholics from our community and around the world. WSFI Spotlight re-airs on Saturday at 3:30 p.m. or listen on demand anytime by subscribing to our podcast. Visit WSFIRadio.org for more information. It's WSFI Spotlight, a conversation with Catholics living in the light. Only on WSFI Catholic Radio, Tuesdays at 7 o'clock p.m.